Welcome back to The Big Something, in-depth conversation on culture and ideas in the Pikes Peak region. I'm Jake Brownell. When you hear the name Ivy Wild these days, you likely think of the old school turned brewery and market just south of I-25 in Colorado Springs. But Ivy Wild, a whole neighborhood at the foot of the Broadmoor, was once a small suburb of Colorado Springs, with a history as rich and colorful as any city in Colorado. Authors Molly Mary and Linda Johnson recently revived some of that history in a small book titled Ivy Wild, A Treasure-Filled Neighborhood History. Producer Noel Black spoke with Mary about some of the characters and stories from the little suburb on the other side of the tracks.
So what inspired you to write this book? History sometimes can be sort of, you know, it can be as small or as big kind of as you want to tackle, but this is a very small history, but lots of fascinating stories.
Ivy Wild's a small neighborhood, and I moved here 3 years ago and joined the Ivy Wild Improvement Society. When I found out that neighborhood organization had been founded in 1898, I thought there must be some history buried somewhere about it, so I started looking and found some things, thought it would be fun for our newsletter, and as I looked, it just got to be more and more fascinating. And for such a small geographic area, I was just amazed at some of the information we found. And I was really interested in creating something that didn't focus on the Palmers and the Penroses and the Strattons and Helen Hunt Jackson, some of those big names. I wanted to tell more stories. There are also some local history books that focus on buildings, old houses. But to me, the stories of the everyday people who settled and created this little neighborhood really became fascinating to me. And also at a point in time where Ivy Wild's really turning around, it was pivotal in Colorado Springs history as the midpoint between the Broadmoor and downtown. And now with Joe Coleman and Mike Bristol and Jim Fennell's project at the school, it's really at a pivotal point. And they really did their work keeping the feeling of what Ivy Wild originally was, and we hope will continue to be.
So I think in many ways, Ivy Wild has become synonymous with the building, with the school as it is currently incarnated as the brewery and the various marketplaces. What was Ivy Wild originally? It wasn't part of Colorado Springs. And what are the boundaries?
The boundaries are the west side of Nevada, Cheyenne Road, and there is a little piece that jogs south of Cheyenne Road up to 8th Street, and then over to Motor City Way. That property where Motor City Way is considered Ivy Wild. The housing part really kind of ends at Hilltop and Brookside, but Motor City's still part of it.
And it was not originally a part of Colorado Springs.
No, it never was. It was originally farming and ranching, which makes perfect sense along the creeks there, between Fountain Creek and Cheyenne Creek and with the waterways there. And then a man named William Jenkins had some ranching farming property there, and he created in 1888 the original little housing development, really in the area of where the Edelweiss restaurant is right now.
Is he any relation to Chris and Dave Jenkins of Norwood Development, or is that just a
coincidence?
No,
and Linda actually looked into that, and that's a coincidence.
Got it. I want to ask you, one of the things I was most fascinated by was the story of this gentleman, John Bathhouse Coughlin, who is also referred to as The Bath.
The Bath.
Which is a great name. and he created a place called Zoo Park. And I consider myself maybe not an avid local history fan, but I had never even heard of this place. And I saw a picture in there, and there's a picture of a giant roller coaster and everything. And then there's this story of Princess Alice, this really eccentric elephant. Talk about John Coughlin and the park, who he was, the park, and some of those stories, which is great.
I'd love to. John Coughlin was the longest serving alderman, that means city councilman, in Chicago. He made a fortune he was corrupt, he was a crook, in graft and prostitution, gambling, horse racing, and he had a partner, Mike Hinky Dink McKenna. It's just so colorful. Bath got his name because he started working in what were called the bathhouses in the Levee District of Chicago, and obviously learned some of those underground businesses pretty early. He came out to Colorado Springs because he heard about it from some of his prostitutes that had come out here for the cure. For tuberculosis or right. Who knows what else.
Which Colorado Springs was famous for, you know, throughout the country.
Absolutely. There were sanatoriums along Cheyenne Creek. He came out to visit them and just fell in love with the place. So he bought 100 acres on Cheyenne Creek and what's now Cheyenne Road. And he at first was going to build a housing development and then who knows why decided to build this zoo. So on that 100 acres, he built this very grand zoo. And when you see the book and there are other pictures down, there were more pictures than we could put in down at the Pioneers Museum. Just a phenomenal big stuff and a zoo long before the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo existed. The interesting thing about the bath was that he was very eccentric in his dress. He would wear purple coats and green pants, and the story goes that he brought a trunk of shoes out to Colorado Springs on one of his visits. He had 20 pair of yellow leather shoes, so he was quite an interesting guy. But he lived this very clean life in Colorado Springs. No liquor was allowed at the zoo, but in Chicago, he lived this very corrupt life. So that we found that to be a very interesting part of the story.
Huh. It's interesting because, you know, I often have wondered what mafia money has passed through Colorado Springs. And he seems like sort of a, like he was laundering his money out here in a way.
And I don't know that we'll ever know that. We did find in our research that a play had been put on in Chicago called Ivy Wild, The True Story of John Bathhouse Coughlin. And I contacted the playwright and was also a performer in the play, and he was so fascinated to, we did a lot of visiting about the area.
Yeah, that would be, I would be amazing to see that performed here.
We would love to see it performed here.
Talk about Princess Alice, the elephant.
Princess Alice was apparently in the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago and had, I don't know if they were moving her in an elevator or what exactly that was, but her part of her trunk was amputated. And so Coughlin bought her to bring her out here, and the story goes that she drank a pint of whiskey every day. Some resources say that's not just a myth.
Apocryphal.
Yes, and others say, well, no, it was true. She died in the fire that burned the zoo, unfortunately.
The lines like the one I'm about to read grabbed me a lot throughout this book, which it was so fun to read through. Some of the animals, this was after, in 1916, after the zoo and the park were torn down, some of the animals ended up as steaks at Tucker's restaurant.
Yes, that's what our research found. So the elk and the bison and some of those animals, yeah, they didn't know what to do with them. So I guess that was a logical recycling or something.
Now, was the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, was Penrose aware of the bath? Was the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo sort of built? Because I think it was around that same time, around 1913, that Penrose was making his fortune. Was that part of why he wanted to start his own zoo? Do you know?
I have often wondered. I don't know if there was any direct connection, but I wondered if Penrose saw the success of Zoo Park and realized it would be a great amenity to have. There were often 4,000 people that would take the trolley down to Coughlin Zoo Park on a weekend. So clearly it was a very popular attraction. So it would make sense for Penrose to build another one.
The trolley is another thing I think people, I remember when I first found out that we had a trolley, and I imagine this place with this amusement park and this trolley, and it's the feeling I always get is like, that's the city I want to live in now. And it was here, you know, over 100 years ago. And obviously, it was a trolley system that was put in. And then Winfield Scott Stratton bought it and was very concerned about providing public transportation for people without a lot of means. What happened to the trolley system down there?
The trolley system, when the trolley system was built, it was the public transportation. People didn't have cars. And a lot of the cottage houses in the older section of Ivy Wild don't have garages. They were built because people got on the trolley to go into the city to work. And so as cars became popular And there's something in the book about the numbers of cars and how rapidly that grew. There was really wasn't the need for the trolley anymore, and so a bus system took that over, and the trolley lines were all ripped up. But I'm with you. I get this vision of people climbing on the trolley and what a long trip it must have been all mm-hmm. the way out to Ivy Wild at some point to go to the zoo and also to the ball field.
Yes. Talk about the ball field a little bit, because it was a short-lived period of time, but there was a team called the Millionaires.
The Colorado Springs Millionaires, yes. And they had a terrible track record, but people came out in droves to watch and play. And I think it was only 4 years that the ball field existed and then was torn down.
It's amazing that something could come up and go down so quickly.
Exactly.
And where exactly was the ball field? Is it where the school is now, essentially?
No, it was up in the vicinity of kind of behind where Safeway is off in Nevada.
Okay. Speaking of which, what was Nevada like during this period of time? Because you make mention of it still having trees and medians like it does on North Nevada.
That's exactly what it looked like back then. It was tree-lined boulevard. And it wasn't this main drag. People didn't travel to Pueblo and Canyon City like they do now. And so it was very much lined with houses and beautiful trees. And as commercial entities came in, the houses were torn down. The original Jenkins house was a beautiful house on Nevada with a turret on one side. And that house was moved over on Ramona and is in pretty sad shape. But at one time, it was a spectacular, almost a mansion for its time.
What year did Nevada start to transform into what it is today? Was it around the time that Fort Carson was set up as a military base in the 1950s?
I think that had a lot to do with it. I also think the post-war boom. And Ivy Wild really had a boom at that time. Fort Carson grew with the war, and a lot of military people moved here. And then it just was easier to get around with automobiles, and Nevada became a logical place to put in commercial buildings and stores and restaurants and gas stations, of course.
Some of the other famous residents, Johnny Smith, the great jazz guitarist who wrote music for Duke Ellington, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, a.k.a. Cassandra Peterson, lived in Ivy Wild, and Charles Craig, the painter, as well. Talk about them a little bit, and just sort of what is it about Ivy Wild as a place that has such a, in a lot of ways, a different identity from Colorado Springs as a whole?
It does. I think being along the creeks there and kind of in the shadow of Cheyenne Mountain and Pikes Peak, it really is a stunning setting. Of course, water always draws settlement because it's such a necessary thing to have. And the views from Ivy Wild are so spectacular. So Charles Craig had a house on Mount Washington, and we have a photo of that in the book. And you look at it, it's like this small little cabin-looking thing, and there's nothing around it. So what a perfect place to gain inspiration for his landscapes and also in the area where the Cheyenne Indians camped. And he was known as an Indian painter of the West. So Elvira grew up, her mother and aunt owned Peterson's Party Land, which became Ivy Wild Costumes, which my co-author Linda Johnson owned and recently sold. And so that was the connection there.
Is that how she got into the sort of the gothy late night hostess of television shows? Was it the costume business in some way?
Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but she developed that character for something, and something she was doing, and it just took off because she had done several things, tinkered with a musical career before she developed this persona of Elvira, and that just took off so dramatically that's been her calling card, so to speak, all these years.
Last question. As we go forward, it seems like Ivy Wild is again taking on its own identity as a region within Colorado Springs now. And I wonder, you know, aside from obviously the school project, which has such a huge center of gravity, what other things do you think going forward will sort of continue to define that neighborhood as a distinct place within Colorado Springs?
I think there's been an interest as South Nevada has deteriorated. I think there's been an interest in looking at the natural environment that Ivy Wild has, and really recognizing what an amenity that is. So the creek itself is going to be a sort of a pivotal place, a center point for the urban renewal that's on the brink of being planned and happening, to bring the creek back to life as people utilize walking paths and biking trails. The creek is just such a natural for that. So I think that's an important part. Also, Ivy Wild is the gateway into the Broadmoor. And the Broadmoor's been critically important economically for Colorado Springs. So I think the nicer the gateway is into the Broadmoor, the better it is for the city as a whole. We just like to see the balance of recognizing that a smaller neighborhood that's been active since 1898, that's pretty phenomenal. Down at the Pioneers Museum, Ivy Wild is the only neighborhood that they have any really true in-depth records of. There are lots of photographs of other neighborhoods, but the Ivy Wild Improvement Society kept these incredible notes of trying to get fire protection and working with water issues and all the kind of things that we're still thinking about today. So that the connection and the cycle of that is pretty fascinating.
Molly Mary, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.